The NBA second round is taking a turn as two series are deadlocked at two, with the defending champion Nuggets winning on the road and Indiana taking care of home court. Will that trend continue tonight in Cleveland and Dallas? On the ice, the Rangers and Panthers are this close to an Eastern Conference showdown, while the Canucks and Stars inch that much closer to facing off out west. The NFL schedule will be revealed on Wednesday, and to open up the season in Kansas City is a blockbuster matchup that will be highly anticipated. Baseball is on the down low as it's status quo for the most part, and Mystic Dan will run in the Preakness come Saturday in Pimlico. I'll tell you why that's not a good thing for horse racing. Revved up and ready to go, and to deliver the first of two podcasts this week is none other than yours truly. It's all coming up, but first, these messages. I'm elated and honored to welcome in a new partnership here on the podcast. Are you familiar with Olipop Soda? If you're not, well, listen up. I haven't been a soda drinker for quite some time, but when I discovered Olipop and what they're all about, I was all in. Not only is it a prebiotic soda that's good for your gut, it's non-GMO, organic, with ingredients that you can actually read. That's right. No 12 or 14 letter words that you can't pronounce. And are you worried about the dreaded high fructose corn syrup? Not here, as there's very little sugar, 4 grams per serving. And then the flavors? You have vintage cola, orange squeeze, my favorite, tropical punch, banana cream, what? Plus the classics such as root beer, lemon lime, and ginger ale, which has a better taste. How could I forget? The taste. Crisp, refreshing, without feeling bloated afterward, than the usual brands that you're familiar with. Right now, you can get 15% off at checkout when you use the code SODALOVE, and I'll get a percentage of that based on your purchase. It's a win-win for both of us. Please go to drinkolipop.com and use SODALOVE for 15% off at checkout. Thanks to the good people at Olipop, and an early thank you for shopping at drinkolipop.com. J-Reel's here to spend a brief moment and share a friendly reminder to please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on whichever platform you listen to on the regular. Just so we can increase the visibility of the J-Reel's podcast to those who aren't familiar with it. Leave plenty of stars, write a favorable review. It will go a long way for the curious listener looking to hop on board to get a dose of entertaining and passionate sports talk. For the visually inclined, please subscribe to my YouTube channel at J-Reel's as I post daily shorts and weekly vlogs, not only delving into the world of sports, but follow me on my journey to take the podcast and channel to new heights as I provide an in-depth, behind-the-scenes look at what it takes for yours truly to produce content on a day-in, day-out, week-in, week-out basis. It goes without saying how much I truly appreciate all of your support. And without further ado, the J-Reels podcast begins in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's get this sports podcast party started, all right?
The J-Reels podcast.
Why don't you wait until July 1st to make an announcement? What a disgrace. He can rack up all these numbers in October, November, and December, but what really counts is let me see this in January.
The sports rebel without a pause, delivering fast-paced, jam-packed sports talk like no other.
Listen, I gotta call it as I see it. He is not a good player. I'm sick and tired of having to deal with the disappointment of this franchise. When does it stop? And yes, another winter that I can sleep in peace. Coming correct, direct, and in full effect. Let's get it.
This is the J-Reels Podcast. Welcome aboard.
What is happening, my good people? Greetings. How are you? How's it going? How's everybody doing out there? What is the latest and greatest? Hope everybody's doing well, feeling fantastic, in excellent spirits. The middle of May is approaching, and the sports stove is as hot as can be with plenty cooking and lots for me to serve up, as this is the J-Reels Podcast with your host, J-Reels. For my first timers, welcome aboard. And for those who've been banging with me going back to the very beginning, somewhere in the middle, or even as early as this past Thursday, I welcome you guys and gals back. And yes, there's plenty to dive into. We have a golf tournament that's going to start this coming Thursday, which we'll talk about on Thursday's podcast. But the second leg of golf's Grand Slam season will be right in front of us as the PGA will tee off there Thursday morning in Valhalla, the country club, which a lot of people are anticipating, considering coming off the Masters last month, a week from today, or really a week from this coming Sunday. Maybe it is this coming Sunday. The French Open begins, so the second leg of tennis's Grand Slam will have that cooking as well. End of the month, we have the Indianapolis 500 for the few of you who are into auto racing, and obviously all of the playoff action and even some baseball, and yes, the NFL front and center here come Wednesday night as everybody's going to be anticipating the schedule release and a blockbuster matchup to start off the year, which we'll get into later on. So with all that cooking, the first thing I'm going to serve as I lace up my high tops, of course, is going to be the NBA. And think about this. On Thursday, we were talking about how a lot of these series could be quick. We may have a couple of sweeps, considering what we saw, what happened in Minnesota, or in Minnesota and Denver, I should say, in the Mile High City, how the Timberwolves took the first two games and coming home thinking that possibly, maybe there would have been a sweep at the hands of the T-Wolves over the defending champion Denver Nuggets. Well, as we saw, that is not the case, and that's where I'm going to begin. Because the Nuggets showed their mettle. They showed their toughness. Their coach actually put them to task to say, you guys are the defending champs. Act like them. And we can look back at what happened there in Denver the first couple of games where, for whatever the reason, they seemed to be in a slumber. And even though they had a few days off after beating the Lakers, and those were hotly contested games, and we know what Minnesota did in the first round themselves, sweeping Phoenix away, so they had plenty of rest. But for Denver to now bounce back, to get themselves in a position where they took away the home court, and I said this on Thursday, people, check those receipts. Considering that game two was Monday and game three was Friday, that was going to be the panacea for the ills of the Nuggets, because to have 4 days off between games to kind of reboot, reset, and recalibrate to get themselves back in championship form, and that's what you saw. And it's interesting because even in the post game last night with Anthony Edwards, and I'm sure you saw the back and forth with he and Jamal Murray there in the throes of game four, and with Edwards, him saying that, yeah, the worst thing for us was to have that 3 to 4 day layoff where maybe they got a little bit stale. If they would have played, let's say, Wednesday night, who knows? It would have been a different series. All the momentum was on the Timberwolves side, as we know. And for whatever the reason, they had the highest of highs leaving the Mile High City. And then it just came crashing down to the tune of back-to-back wins by the Nuggets. Jamal Murray, who a lot of people thought should have been suspended for Game 3 because of his actions throwing that heating pad onto the court, scored 24 points with the raining boos coming down from the Target Center toward the Nuggets guard. And then last night, Nikola Jokic, 35 points. I understand that you had Anthony Edwards scoring 44, but the back and forth between the two guards, Jokic, who is coming off of an MVP, another one, third time in 4 years, as we discussed on Thursday's podcast. And for the Nuggets to now get the series back to Denver tied at two. Of course, here's the difference. When you look back before Friday's game, everybody's thinking this is probably going to be a 5 or 6 game series that would tailor to the Minnesota Timberwolves. And it could still turn out to be that way. But now all the momentum is on the Nuggets side. And you would think that the Nuggets will get home here with a playoff series victory because of their experience, their DNA, and based on what happened last year, I'm sure they erased all the doubts and the naysayers thinking that the Nuggets were going to be left for dead somewhere in the Twin Cities. So now as we're looking at it from here on out, how could you not pick the Nuggets? And even though the T-Wolves, especially with Anthony Edwards, when discussed about the back and forth, he said, yeah, things were said, but that's what I like. That's what we like. That's what we want. They want all that smoke. And I could see Edwards coming out furiously in a game number 5, which will be tomorrow night. And for the Nuggets, who now you would think, not going to say they're going to be in cruise control, but with them having the inside track to coming out of the series alive because they did wrestle the home court away from the T-Wolves. But we all know the Timberwolves are not going to be afraid to play in that arena considering they won 2 games there. And knowing that if they could just take game 5 and then bring it back to Minnesota, although they haven't beaten the Nuggets there so far in the postseason. But obviously, everybody's going to be riding high thinking that if the Timberwolves do win a Game 5, that, oh, not to say it's going to be an automatic, but a lot of people will think that the T-Wolves will close out the Nuggets there on their home court. But I would think that the Nuggets, right now, they got them where they want them. The Nuggets, right now, you would think that they're going to be in championship form. Of course, anything can happen. The Nuggets could probably fall flat and maybe even lay an egg here, considering what the Timberwolves had done in the first early part of the series. But I think the Nuggets now should be in good shape to win this series. And it probably will go 7 when it's all said and done. And would you be surprised if the T-Wolves go in there, win game 5, and then the Nuggets win a game 6 in Minnesota before a game 7 where all bets are off? I mean, everybody will think that maybe Minnesota will be favored to win that game. And, well, maybe not favored, with the odds makers in Vegas, but a lot of people would think that because the Nuggets have won three games, if it does play out in that way, who knows? Right now it's unpredictable, but I would think that the Nuggets will be in good stead to win this series. I would think maybe now in six games, because they are not going to fool around knowing that they've come home. They've got the series now where they could at least host two games in their building, but I'm sure they're not going to fool around to think that, okay, let's just get this game five, and then when we get to Minnesota, we know we can win there and see if we can at least get a day or two off before facing off in the conference finals against OKC or Dallas, and I'll get to that series in a minute. The other series yesterday were the Knicks and Pacers, where the Indiana Ball Club, they came from an 0-2 deficit with two tough losses at Madison Square Garden. Very close game there on Friday night, tooth and nail, where you had Andrew Nembhard hit the big three there at the end, which pretty much sealed the game. And I know the Knicks fan could be a little bit upset with the officiating. The box out there with Isaiah Hartenstein and Pascal Siakam in the waning moments of that game. And then, of course, Brunson, who took that ill-fated three. It was off balance, and he tried to draw contact. You know that's Brunson's game. And, of course, the Knicks fan could get upset about that. But as we all know, considering dating back to the Philadelphia series where they got calls, and I understand they may not have gotten the whistle there in Game 5 against Philly, but early on in this series, the officiating certainly was poor. We know that Rick Carlisle sent, 78 different calls in Game 2 to the league office to try to get themselves at least the beneficiary of the officials and the whistles there in Games 3 and 4. But they were able to survive that game, which was a carbon copy of the first two games. And then yesterday, what could you say? That game was over pretty much about 5 minutes left in the first quarter as the Pacers just blitzed their way, led as many as 40 points in the game. I think at one point they were up by 41 and cruised to a 32-point victory. The Knicks, who rarely blow teams out and also the team that's not blown out, but this was one that you just flushed down the toilet. Made no excuses in the postgame. They knew that this was going to be a tough series, that Indiana, when they run and gun like that, they're going to be tough to stop. Knicks were awful from three. Obviously, the Pacers were very good from three. Called the dogs off by the fourth quarter. You didn't see any of the key starters there in the final quarter of the game. And that's all you need to know about a 121-89 thrashing by the Pacers against the Knicks. And now the question is, can the Pacers steal one of two games at Madison Square Garden? Because that's where the series is going to lie. You would think that the Knicks are going to take care of home court considering what we've seen. Of course, the Pacers will say, well, hey, we were in those two games, including a game one, when we were up by 9 points in the fourth quarter. But I got to see them close these games. Just like they closed out game three in their building, they need to have that same energy, whether it's in game five. And I know that they do not want to tempt fate in a game seven, but they would have to play in crunch time to where they're going to have to deliver in order to win this series and move on to an Eastern Conference final. That's all there is to it. Where the Knicks, we know they can win those type of games in their building. Can the Pacers do the same? To me, that's the burning question here over the course of these final, you would think, three games. And I think it's going to go seven, and I think the Knicks are going to win this series when it's all said and done. But for the Pacers, that's what we have to see them show and prove when the lights are bright, right there on Broadway at MSG, to see if they could steal one of those two games in order to win the series. Now, of course, we know they have to win their home game, but we're going to assume that they're going to do so considering what we've seen here so far. Obviously, there's no guarantees, but I want to see their makeup and their mental toughness in crunch time that we were unable to see in games one and two. If they're going to win the series, they're going to have to do so. You would think more so game five tomorrow night than a game seven, which would be what? On Saturday evening. So we'll have to wait and see, but I think the Knicks will prevail. Same for Denver. I picked Denver to win in seven even before the start of the series. So that's how those two series are going to go. And then now, where we'll have two game fours tonight in Cleveland with the Celtics. I'll start there because the Cavaliers and what you saw in game two, and this is why the Celtics are unpredictable. Can the Celtics lose a home game in the playoffs? As we've seen over the last few years, they have. But yes, not to say it has to be down to the wire or tooth and nail. But let's say if it was a situation where the Cavs pulled away and they won a game by 8 points, 10 points. All right, fine. That could happen at any given moment. But for the Celtics to be down by 29 points in the fourth quarter in their own building, with a team that won how many games in their building this year during the regular season? They were 37-4. And granted that the Heat had a historic night shooting threes in game two of the first round, but what was the excuse here in game two there on Thursday night? Inexplicable, to say the least. Jason Tatum, who has been off in the wilderness somewhere prior to Saturday night's game, and of course I'll get to that, but for Donovan Mitchell, who's had a very good series, 29 points, Evan Mobley chipped in big time, and the Cavaliers went going away 118-94, and it certainly made yours truly question whether or not that this team, who I would think still at the end of the day will probably win this series in five, although let's see what's going to happen tonight, because I'm sure the Cavs are going to come out storming, firing, etc. But they did back up the previous series when they had to go down to Miami, and we know that Miami is a nemesis to the Celtics, but they backed it up with a very good performance there on Saturday night. Jason Tatum finally came to life, 33 points. Jaylen Brown also chipped in 28, 13 for 17 from the floor, I might add, as those two players combined for 61 points and pretty much were in cruise control throughout the second half of that game. The Cavaliers never really threatened. I think they cut it to 9 at one point, but the Celtics won by 13. And if the Celtics are going to play like that, where let's say Donovan Mitchell is going to get his points, but the remainder of the team is going to be spotty and they're going to defend and play the way the Celtics have throughout the course of this regular season, and at some points in the postseason, in particular games 3, 4, and 5 against Miami, and we could even say game 1 and game 3 against the Cavs, then they should be able to dispose of the Cavaliers in 5 games. But, again, the unpredictability of this team. Watch them come out tonight, lay another egg, and then they're going to go back to Boston, tied at 2, similar to the 2 series that we've already covered. So, we'll see. Again, I still think 5 games. It's probably going to go 6 when it's all said and done. But let's see how the Celtics come out tonight as that series resumes. And then, of course, the nightcap will be Oklahoma City and Dallas. And now we're going to really see what the Oklahoma City Thunder are made of. Because with Luka Doncic hobbling all over the court and with Kyrie Irving being the superhero as he's had his cape on, and with the Thunder now with their backs up against the wall, facing a 3-1 series deficit, and I won't put the cart before the horse to think that, well, what will happen if the Thunder go down 3-1? Could they win the rest of the series and sweep their way into a Western Conference final? They could, but I don't think they will. Young team, young coach, they played out in front pretty much the whole year, although Denver and Minnesota were threatening to wrestle that one seed away from them. And then we saw what they did in the opening round against New Orleans without Zion. And then they came out in the game one where they just blew the doors off of the Mavericks. But then now, here they are, facing their first test after the Mavericks came back to tie the series. And Luka was heroic in that game. And then Kyrie had to pretty much put it all together there in a game number 3. Very close. Down to the wire, well, maybe not down to the wire, but close enough to where the Thunder certainly had their opportunities to win a game 3, but they were unable to do so thanks to 8 fourth quarter points and 28 in the game for Kyrie, and even Luka saying that he's doing it all. And thank God that he has a guy that is pretty much a 1A, because we can look at Luka, that's his team, he's Batman to Kyrie's Robin, but we all know that Kyrie can play Batman, and even though he's better off as a second fiddle as being a guy that's going to carry the team as a number one, but we know Kyrie's talent and his ability is that of a one, and he's certainly showing that not only just in this series, but throughout this whole postseason, and that's the one danger that you, if you're a Thunder fan, that you're going to really be concerned about, because it's not as if you have to focus in on the one guy. And even though Luka, who's going to be put together with scotch tape and bubblegum and maybe even spit at this point, he could still produce, as you saw by his stat line. But we know that he's limited and he's certainly compromised by his health. So he's going to do whatever he can and however he can. But Kyrie is healthy. He's raring to go. He wants to be that guy to take this team to heights that hasn't been seen here for now, what, over a dozen years since the Mavericks have been to an NBA final, and they were in a conference final a couple of years ago against the Golden State Warriors, and as we know, they lost, I believe, in 5 games, maybe it was 6 off the top of my head. But now this is going to be the true test. How this Thunder team is going to respond tonight. And yes, can they still win the series even if they're down 3-1? Of course they can. Do I think they will? I don't think they will. But something tells me I think that the Thunder will regroup tonight. And this is all going to fall. I hate to put it all on him, considering he was number two in the MVP this year. But now let's see Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Now where the spotlight is going to be on him. MVP caliber player, a guy that has been front running the whole year. And I mean that in the most complimentary way. Because usually when I say a team is front running or a player is front running, it's more of a negative connotation when it comes from yours truly. But no, I want to see, and this is what's going to be fascinating about this game tonight. Let's see him put up a 35-9-8. And even if they win by 1 point and they literally hang on by the edge of their fingernails, as long as they leave Dallas with the series tied at 2, that'll say a lot about not only he, but the team and especially the coach. But two interesting games tonight. I know the Celtics are up 2-1, so a lot of people will think that they're going to win. Although maybe Donovan Mitchell will pull a rabbit out of the hat and they'll even the series. But the nightcap is the one that everybody's going to look forward to see whether or not OKC is going to be as advertised, considering what they've done in the regular season and pretty much up until this point in the postseason. Because now they're facing adversity for the first time, and how they're going to respond to that is going to be compelling, to say the least. So that's what I have with the playoff recap, and I'll go through the schedule, and then there's a couple of NBA notes I want to touch on. The schedule has tonight, as I mentioned, no shock there. Celtics are the first game, 7 o'clock, and then 9:30, you'll have OKC and Dallas. Those games will be on TNT. Tomorrow, you're going to have Indiana, New York at 8, followed by Minnesota at Denver at 10:30. Also TNT, Wednesday, Cleveland at Boston at 7, Dallas, OKC, 9:30. Those are your matchups over the next three nights. And then, of course, we'll reconvene on Thursday where the series will pick up. And it'll be a little bit of a break in the schedule, but we'll talk about that on Thursday's podcast. Now, as far as the news and notes in the NBA, you had a firing where Frank Vogel, now was it his fault? Absolutely not. The Suns disposed of him after 1 year, and I don't know how many years he signed on the dotted line. Maybe it was a four-year deal from what I can recall. But for Vogel to be axed after 1 year, and was it really his fault when Bradley Beal wasn't in the lineup for a third of the year, and even though Beal didn't shake his hand upon coming off the court at the end of, or toward the end of game four there against the T-Wolves, and I don't know if you want to put it all on Kevin Durant or even Devin Booker as guys that maybe Matt Ishbia probably conferred with and said, hey, do we want to have him back here next year? Maybe we could get somebody else. And did they approve of that? Who knows? Of course, that's behind closed doors unless somebody's going to uncover that here in the days and weeks to come. And for Vogel, unfair, not all his fault. I mean, let's face it. And of course, they have no depth on this team. And as we talked about when they were just eviscerated by the Timberwolves, this is a team that even with Mike Budenholzer, who, yes, that guy who beat the Suns in the NBA championship 3 years ago is now the head coach of the Phoenix Suns, 5-year deal, that I do know. And for Budenholzer to come in with his reputation, and I'm sure the Bucks, maybe to this very second, are still regretting firing Budenholzer considering everything that happened, and I've talked about that in podcasts past. You'd have to go back to the archives and the receipts to check those. But great hire, I thought, by the Suns and Matt Ishbia. Hopefully he can just leave the team alone. But with that being said, as I'll do just a little bit of a recap of what I've said about, what, 2 weeks ago? The Suns, to me, in order for them to even get to championship aspirations, they're probably going to have to trade one of those three players. They're not going to trade Beal, who has 3 years and $151 million on his contract. And for Devin Booker, who to me is the face of that organization, he's starting his Supermax deal for what is it, $220 million. And Kevin Durant still has 2 years and $106 million. So the guy that you want to get out of here is Durant, considering he's starting to get in the back nine, or he already is in the back nine of his career. Let's call it as we see it. But he's probably on the 15th hole at this point. And with no depth and with no reinforcements that are probably going to be coming through the pike, they would have to trade one of those guys in order to get anything back to replenish that bench. They're not going to sniff anything close to an NBA final. So even if Budenholzer tries to sprinkle some of that Milwaukee Buck dust from 2021, the Suns are going to be in no shape to compete with the Denver Nuggets, the Oklahoma City Thunders, the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Dallas Mavericks, dare I say, the LA Clippers, or the Lakers for that matter, Golden State too? No way. So let's move on from there. But Budenholzer, congratulations to him as he's back in the fold in the NBA coaching circles. Then you had the Atlanta Hawks for the first time since 1975, and with a 3% chance of getting the first overall pick, what happens? The ping pong balls bounce their way. So for the Hawks, who obviously made it into the playing scenario, they lost to the Chicago Bulls, if you recall, what was it, about a month ago? Maybe less than that. About 3.5 weeks ago. And for them to get the number one pick, now mind you, it's not a class that everybody's going to go gaga over, although there are a couple of prospects that have been thought out. So guys that I can't even discuss right now because I've never even seen them play. But for those that are at the top of the pecking order when it comes to the mock drafts, those are two guys. One I've heard of, and I can't even think of his name right now. But the other guy, Alex, let me make sure I get this right because I don't want to screw this up. I want to say his name is Alex Saar. But for the Hawks, I'm sure they're excited to be able to get a guy that they could probably just plug in there with Trae Young. Yeah, Alexander Saar is the one guy that a lot of people are thinking could be the number one pick overall. A French big man, 7'1". I don't know if there's going to be any comparisons to a one Victor Wembanyama, certainly not in height or with his wingspan, but a guy that with Trae Young, DeJounte Murray, two guys in the backcourt to plug in, to go along, I should say, with a big man, that could be a huge plus. Let's see if he's going to be the first pick there in late June. So the Hawk fan, the five of you outside the Atlanta area could certainly rejoice and have visions of whomever they're going to draft dancing in their head. And then lastly, for Patrick Beverly to get a 4-game suspension to start next year because of his antics there at the end of Game 6 in Indiana where he threw a ball at a woman's head there. Why he did that to begin with, I don't know. Maybe he was being playful and for whatever reason hit the woman in the head. And then when the ball was thrown back to Beverly, then he fired a fastball right back at that fan. And all he's going to get is 4 games. This is the same guy at the end of the Western Conference Finals 2021 where he shoved Chris Paul in the back. They didn't even have the guts to face him face to face or look him in the eye to snuff him and maybe, not to say he's going to start a brawl there, but for him to do that, and I believe he was suspended off the top of my head, I can't even recall, that was a few years ago, but for Beverly to only get 4 games? I mean, seriously? I'm not saying you got to throw the book at him, give him half a season or anything like that, but can we start at 10? That's inexcusable. You can't engage in that fashion, especially with a fan, where not only did he throw, why was he throwing a ball at a fan in the first place, even if he was being playful? The team is going to be out in the first round again, even though Beverly's been here for 5 minutes from his trade early in the season from Philadelphia. But he has to get more than 4 games. And that's an indictment on the commissioner and the higher-ups of the NBA. They want to be friends with the players. They don't want to have to crack down and really put the hammer as far as a verdict goes. And if you know that was David Stern, he certainly would have put probably at least 10 games on the ledger for Patrick Beverly. So you know he's spinning in his grave. So that's what we have there with the NBA as we move it along here. Looking forward to the games tonight and obviously the next couple of nights before we reconnect there on Thursday. And yes, and if I didn't even mention, now that I look at this, if I didn't even mention the game two that PJ Washington had where he was 7-11 from 3, 27 points, and that's even with Luka stumbling, bumbling, and fumbling around with his broken down body. My apologies for not bringing that up, but P.J. Washington had a huge game. And think about that. That was on the road where usually that type of performance happens in the home court because of the surroundings, the fans, I'm sure, players who... And P.J. Washington, obviously a guy that they brought over during the middle of the season. He, Daniel Gafford, and for him to contribute in that way was a surprise considering he was on the road. Let's see if he could have that type of performance tonight, as I mentioned, with the Mavericks looking to put a stranglehold on that series. So now let me lace up my skates and let's take a trip around the ice to see what's happening there as I take a sip of water. Thank you for that. So for the NHL, at this very moment, it looks like the East is just about wrapped up. And out West, you have a little bit of some light as to how it could shape up for what's taking place in the Western Conference. I'll start in the East only because we're now that much closer from a Ranger Florida Panther Conference Final, which I think would be a great final. And I think that's the final, although the NHL would rather have New York and Boston, which would have been interesting, because could you imagine if the Bruins can do what the Panthers did to them last year, as the Panthers are now up 3-1 in the series, and shift the tide to where they can win the next three and oust the Florida Panthers, where you'll have a New York-Boston Stanley Cup semifinal, and you would think it's going to still play out for a New York-Boston NBA conference final. How could you have it any better? But as of right this second, it's sure looking like the Florida Panthers, and based on what we saw there, even going back to game two, how physical it was with Pastrnak getting into that fight with Matthew Tkachuk, and then you saw what happened there in game number three, where even after that 6-1 win in game two down in Florida, the Panthers showed who was boss, winning 6-2. They knock out Brad Marchand, who did not suit up for game four. And then right out of the gate, you saw the Bruins not only with a 2-0 lead, but you saw Charlie McAvoy run over one of the Panther players. Off the top of my head, I can't recall who it was. And then you saw Pastrnak getting a little bit feisty there at the goal mouth, where he got a roughing penalty, was put in the box, although the Panthers did not score there. But the Bruins did come out firing with their captain out, sidelined. And the hit was looked like it was very innocent too, where Marchand was hit from behind and then he went into the boards, but it wasn't anything that looked graphic or anything that was, oh geez, borderline dirty. But for Marchand, their captain, to be out, and then the Bruins were trying to retaliate and got out of the gate with a 2-0 lead. And then the Panthers started to chip away. They scored a goal there in the second. And then in the third period, the controversy started where Sam Bennett scored that goal right in the crease. But in the process, he cross-checked Brandon Carlo into Jeremy Swayman. So with Swayman losing his balance, and then with him hitting Carlo into the goaltender, the puck was right there at his feet, just slammed it in. And when it went to review right away, the Bruins wanted to review it. And it came back that the play on the ice stood. And to me, that was just mind-boggling. Because you saw what Bennett did. You saw everything that happened in consequential form. Bennett, Carlo, Carlo to Swayman, the puck at Bennett's feet, right into the net. How could that not be called? Or how could that goal be allowed? So the Bruin fan was highly upset. And I'm sure if you're Jim Montgomery and company, and to my cousin JD, who's a diehard Bruin fan, I'm sure he was sick to his stomach at that point. And then what happened after that? Game is tied. And then later on, Alexander Barkov weaves his way through the defense, gets the goal there just minutes later, and the Panthers go up 3-2 and hang on the win there at the end, as Sergei Bobrovsky had to make a key stop there in the closing seconds of game four. And now the Panthers are up 3-1. And I would think they're going to win on home ice. I thought the Panthers would win in six. And as it is, who knows? You think they want to get on a plane back to Boston for a game six? I'm sure they're going to do whatever it takes. Although the Bruins, I think they're going to put up a fight here. And who knows? This could be an ugly game if Marchand does come back and play in game five, which right now we don't know. But let's say if he does, just to bring an emotional lift. And let's just say the Panthers, if the game starts going away from the Bruins and it's another one of those 6-2 or 5-1 type games, that's going to be an ugly finish, which to me, I'm going to be anticipating. But it's certainly not going to harken back to 30, 40 years ago, where you're going to have the resident tough guys on the Bruins or the resident tough guys on the Panthers duke at it and settle the score there on the ice to send that message. Well, we'll see, but that's going to be an interesting game five tomorrow night there in South Florida. And then the Rangers, they could actually win their series tonight at the Garden thanks to the Carolina Hurricanes showing some pride in game four. But to go back to game three, after tying the game late by the Panthers, they were down 2-1, and Andrei Svechnikov gets the equalizer there with about a minute and a half to go. And then just 1:43 in overtime, who else but Artemi Panarin gets the game winner. Rangers go up 3-love, and you're thinking, oh boy, Carolina, they're a bunch of paper tigers. You know how much I've talked about them as far as my disgust for them, not only just because they've beaten the Islanders, but I thought as good as a team as they are, and they are a very good team, but they're not a great team. And we saw that here throughout the first three games. And I get it. They're all been close matchups. It's not as if the Rangers have blown them out in the first three games. But they just don't have that extra gear when you don't have that star-studded, not to have to be star-studded, but when you don't have that superstar, that one guy that you really rally around, or two guys, the Rangers, as we all know, they're loaded. And we understand not every team in the National Hockey League has three or four snipers or three or four big-time playmakers. Understood. But for Carolina then to get off the deck and for them to bounce back, showed some pride, they scored less than 2 minutes into the game and actually built a 3-1 lead. And then even though the Rangers chipped away and got back into the game to tie it at three before Brady Shea had the power play goal there late in the third period, and then the Hurricanes were able to hang on to win game four. Now the scene will shift to Madison Square Garden tonight. And I think the Rangers are going to win tonight. I believe I picked the Rangers to win in six when the series begun. But for Carolina, let me see them win at the Garden tonight. If they do, then I think they may come back to MSG for game seven. But I don't see it. I think the Rangers, they played well throughout the course of this playoff. I get it. The Capitals were weak sauce, and there was not a sweat to be broken out, although game four was a little bit competitive. But for them to win their first seven games, and now they got a loss in their column here, I think the Rangers are going to do whatever it takes to win and not have to get on a plane to go back to Carolina for game six. And then out west, you have Dallas, who blew game one, as we know. And then they almost blew game two. When you think about it, they got into a 4-0 lead. And you thought to yourself, all right, they have a big enough cushion considering they had a 3-0 lead in game one. And then Colorado came all the way back to win 4-3. So even with the Stars out to a 4-0 lead, I'm sure the fans in the building must have been wondering, all right, this is a big enough lead, is it? And as it was at the moment, it sure didn't look that way because Colorado came back with three goals of their own and they added an empty netter there late. So they left American Airlines Arena with just, thank goodness, we're able to survive that. And I thought going into the game three that this was going to be an interesting test for Dallas because, yes, we saw what they did in the opening round. They were down 0-2 to Colorado and they came all the way back, although the Golden Knights pushed it to a game seven. But I really thought Colorado was going to come out and have a big-time performance to the point where they won the two games in their building against Winnipeg in the opening round. And I get it, it's Winnipeg, not Dallas. But give it up. The Stars played well. Excuse me. They had the opening goal, and then Colorado tied it before Tyler Seguin, late in the second period, got the game-winning goal, essentially. And then they tacked on two empty net goals as Jake Ottinger had 28 saves in the game. And the Stars got the home ice back in their favor. Now let's see if they could really put the hammer on Colorado where they could win a game four tonight. And that would be fascinating because Dallas, I would think, they don't want to fool around here. If this is a team that was a one seed out west, top seed in the conference, and for Colorado, we know their firepower and how lethal they are. But if I'm the Stars, I say, let's get this game and let's just go home. We'll worry about game five then, but let's see if they can win another game and maybe they can put out Colorado when they get back to Big D. I think Colorado still has ammunition. I think they're going to tie the series tonight. I believe I picked Stars in seven. So Dallas, they're showing you something here, and let me see if they can back up that game with a win tonight. Now, if they don't win tonight, not to say that it's a thing where, oh, well, Dallas hasn't shown any toughness or shown any mettle. Well, they got the one game, so that you give them credit. But like I said, as a one seed, we know Colorado is formidable. Let me see them really put a stranglehold on the series to really show the rest of the sport that, oh, Dallas, I guess whatever malaise that they had early on in the series, blowing that game one the way they did, now they're showing who's boss. So I think it would really be more of a statement if they won tonight, because then they would really put themselves in a good position to win in a shorter series where a lot of people thought it was going to be a long series. But we know Colorado is very good, and they certainly do not take a backseat to anybody. But let's see how game four unfolds. I'm looking forward to that. And then Edmonton, I mean, what can you say about them? Last night, another performance where they did not play well, and let's face it, not to say they didn't show up, because they did lose a game three after winning game number two, where it was back and forth, bunch of lead changes before they were able to win the game and got a huge goal there by, let me see as I pull this up here. They steal home ice there on, what was that, Friday night? Because remember, that series started Wednesday. So for the Oilers to even the series, to bring it back to Edmonton, and then last night, I'm thinking that maybe they could go ahead and take a 2-1 series lead, put some pressure on Vancouver, which would have been interesting because Vancouver, in their own right, they were head-to-head and neck-and-neck with Dallas all year as far as them being a team to be a one seed in the West. But for Edmonton, like I said, the back and forth there on Friday night to win in overtime, as you saw there by Evan Bouchard, and you had to get Connor McDavid. Remember, the Canucks had the lead, 1-0, 2-1, and 3-2 before McDavid got the goal there with about 5.5 minutes into the third, and then Evan Bouchard got the overtime winner. So you're thinking, all right, Edmonton should be in good shape. Now, of course, if Edmonton wins tomorrow night, all right, it's 2-2 going back to Vancouver. But just like we saw last year in the series against Vegas, they did lose game three. And yes, they did win a game number four, but then they petered out and lost in six to the eventual Stanley Cup champs. Now, for them last night to have a game where they pretty much had trailed, well, they took a 1-0 lead, and then the Canucks scored three unanswered after that. They tried to chip away, but they were unable to get the equalizer as Vancouver behind Brock Boeser, who had 2 goals in the game and has 3 goals in the series. Now Edmonton is looking at a potential 3-1 series deficit. I think they'll win tomorrow night, but I don't think they're going to win the series, although I'm picking them to win, and I want them to win, I should say, more so because I want to see Edmonton go as far as they possibly can. It's going to be good for the sport. And one thing I will say, we talk about New York, Florida. I think that'll be a very good Eastern Conference final, although the Bettman and the suits at the NHL, they want New York, Boston in the worst way. I would think they would want Colorado, Edmonton as your Western Conference final because of the star power. Yes, Dallas is a one seed and Vancouver is a two seed. So even if you have both of those teams match up, you're going to have 1-2, which is fascinating because you look at it from a standpoint of, all right, well, these are the two best teams in their conference. And then when you're looking at New York and Florida, now Florida is currently what? Florida's a three seed because they play Toronto, as we know, in the first round. No, I take that back. They play Tampa in the first round. My apologies there. But for the NHL, they want to have star power. And they want to have New York, Boston, the two original sixes. Why not? To be a part of this Final Four. If you're going to have New York, Florida, and of course the NHL, they're going to break out the pom-poms and say, well, Florida went to a cup final last year and Colorado won 2 years ago. And if they make it there to a conference final, but if it's Dallas, Vancouver, nobody's going to, especially the casual sports fan or even a diehard hockey fan, they couldn't name 5 players on the Canucks or even 5 players on the Stars for that matter. And that's a problem, even if they are the top 2 seeds out West. So let's see how this shakes down. Colorado, Edmonton, New York, Boston is what they would love. New York, Florida, Colorado, Edmonton is what they would want or what they would have. Anything other than that, especially out West, to me, I don't want to say disaster, that's a little bit too strong, but certainly, give them truth serum, that's not what they would want. So that's what you have there at the NHL. Let me see if I've got any news and notes there before I move on here. Yes, I didn't talk about this the other day, so my apologies, I'll bring this up real quick. San Jose won the lottery there, which was last week, it was before the podcast on Thursday, so they win, and Chicago was second, so to think, they could have gotten back-to-back picks there with Connor Bedard last year, but they get the number 2 overall this year, and I couldn't even tell you. I did see who was the top pick. I couldn't tell you his name off the top of my head, but he did come across the ticker, and I said I got to keep that in mind, but here we are. I'm more wrapped up into the playoffs and not to the lottery, but you know I'll get to that in the middle toward the latter part of next month, so we got that to chew on at that time. And then with the Utah team, you ready for this, people? I know that they're trying to get a bunch of, not necessarily votes, but some people there, or the citizens of Utah, they're trying to gather the team name. And I'm sure there's a big giant ballot where a lot of the citizens are trying to dump in. And you've gotten all these different names, which of course is going to be a plethora of them. And they haven't narrowed it down just yet. But some of these names to me are just like off the rocker. They're actually people that put in Black Diamonds, the Outlaws, the Glaciers. I know Utah, it's snowy, etc. Some of the ones I do like, the Canyons, the Mountaineers. I don't know too much about the Mountaineers. That sounds good, but it's a little bit too long. Utah Mountaineers, it doesn't have a ring. Then you have the Utah Ice. Sounds like a beer. The Freeze, The Hive, I mean, these names are terrible. If you ask me, I like the Utah Canyons. That has a nice little ring. There's the Utah Blizzard, the Utah Swarm. I don't like any of these names. Out of these, and there was others that I left out. If I'm going to choose one of these that I mentioned, the Utah Yeti. Seriously, the Utah Yeti. Say that six times. The Mammoth, that's another one I forgot to mention here. I don't like any of them except the Canyons. Give me the Utah Canyons. We know they have mountains, Salt Lake City, and that's where they're going to play, of course. Give me the Canyons. I'll settle for that, but who knows what they're going to come up with. These other names are just awful. Utah Hive, Utah Ice, Utah Yeti, Utah Freeze, Utah Mammoth, Utah Glaciers. If there was an Alaskan team, I could see Glaciers, but So anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there. I don't like any of those names except for the Canyons. Hopefully they settle on that. Who knows? They'll probably come up with something even crazier than that. So we'll keep you posted as far as that goes. Now let me put on my helmet and shoulder pads real quick. Yes, NFL, because as we all know, the impenetrable shield will be part of our consciousness come Wednesday. And between now and then, you're going to have some leaks here with the schedule that will be released Wednesday, which in years past has been on a Thursday at 8, but they're going to bring it Wednesday at 8. Maybe they looked at the J Reels podcast knowing I'm going to come out on Thursday. I said, I will give J Reels a break so he could talk about some of these matchups, the games, etc. One we do know that the Super Bowl champs, the defending champs, back-to-back champs, I might add, the Kansas City Chiefs, we all know that they host the first game that first Thursday in September, as we've seen here last year where they had the Lions come into their building and the Lions won, as you know, 21-20. Well, your opening night matchup will be the Kansas City Chiefs hosting the Baltimore Ravens. A rematch of the AFC Championship game, which we know was in Baltimore, but this time now your regular season opener is going to be at Arrowhead, another banner raised, the fighter jets flying above, and I'm sure John Harbaugh, even Lamar Jackson, and I'm sure Zay Flowers as well, chomping at the bit, probably as I am speaking, knowing that they are waiting for this highly anticipated matchup between the powers of the AFC. And way too early to even get into this, people. I'm not even going to say, I'm sure the Ravens are going to go in there and run up and down on the butt. Nonsense. I'm not going to even talk about the NFL season. And sadly, it is. It's been 3 months removed since the Super Bowl. And now that we're talking about the schedule, and summer hasn't even begun, and Memorial Day is 2 weeks from today. So the last thing I want to get into is a complete breakdown of the NFL schedule. Although I will, for the sake of the podcast, come Thursday. And not that I'm going to go through every team, people. By any means, that's not the case. But there's your first matchup. The next night in Brazil, you're going to have the Packers against the Eagles in Sao Paulo on Peacock, people. So yes, if you don't have Peacock, get ready. You're going to have to start going to your phone or tablet or whatever smart TV to start signing up to Peacock if you don't have it. I'm sure a ton of you guys and gals do have it, but yes, you're not going to find it on ESPN. You're not going to find it on NBC, which the opener will be on. You're not going to find it on ABC or CBS. The Friday night, the NFL's first ever Friday regular season game is going to be on Peacock. Just think about that. And then, of course, we'll go through, you know, the opening week, you're going to have your 425 game of the week. I'm sure your Sunday night matchup is going to be good. I'm sure it's going to be Dallas. Maybe Dallas and the Giants again. Or who knows what it's going to be. I'm sick of the Giant-Dallas week one matchup down, whether it's in Dallas or at MetLife. But you know the Cowboys are going to be front and center on that opening game. And then you're going to have probably, last year it's weird, you had the one Monday night game. And then the following week you had a Monday night doubleheader. So I don't know, are they going to revert to a Monday night doubleheader to open up the season, or are they just going to have the one game? Last year, I believe it was Ravens and Raiders. Are you going to have that, the standalone, and then the week after the Monday night, or are they going to do the Monday night doubleheader to start and then have your single games on a Monday night? Who knows? Maybe the NFL is going to do a doubleheader from week one all the way to week 17, because, you know, the NFL, they can't get enough of themselves. All they want to do is just suffocate the sports fan and make their product thin because they want to have games on Thursday night, Friday night, Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday night, Thursday night. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And the Friday, Black Friday game, I mean, it's just crazy. And I do say Wednesday, people, because remember, Christmas this coming year is on a Wednesday, and it's going to be a doubleheader, 4:30 and 8:15. So NFL just ready to choke the fan and make sure that they jam all these games down our throats. So we will see what the schedule is going to look like there come Wednesday night. Now let me wrap up with a couple of things. Baseball, there's not really much going on since we last spoke. And I know there was quite a bit to speak on last week. We talked about the Phillies who are still riding high and they're playing hot as they lost a bad game in Miami against the Marlins, but they won 2 out of 3. And the Phillies still at the top of the NL East. And the Braves won 2 out of 3 over the Mets over the weekend to Saturday. They were 1 out away from no hitting the Mets, where J.D. Martinez hit his first home run as a Met in what was the last-ditch effort to get a hit there. And he hit it over the right center field wall. Mets losing 4-1. And then last night, the heroics of Brandon Nimmo, where he had to leave the game on Saturday with soreness on his right side, came in the latter part of the game and in the ninth inning because their closer was unavailable. So you had, I believe it was A.J. Minter who gave up the home run there to Brandon Nimmo. So with McNeil on second, Nimmo on a 3-2 pitch, that's a home run out to right center, same spot where J.D. Martinez hit his home run the previous night, and the Mets salvaged the game against the Braves. And oh, who's coming in the early part of the week to Citi Field? Yes, the aforementioned Philadelphia Phillies. So Mets are just floundering here. They have not won a series in about, what, since the Dodgers series, which is going on 3 weeks. Although they did split a series against the Cubs a couple weeks back. But the Mets still trying to find their way. They're one game under 500. And obviously, they're not going to be a threat there in the NL East as I start off in that direction. As far as the Paul Skenes, remember I talked about him on Thursday. If you listen to the podcast, Paul Skenes, the number one pick out of LSU, Pittsburgh Pirate, made his major league debut on Saturday where he struck out 7 and threw 17 pitches of 100 miles an hour or more, which I know in this day and age, it's all about how hard you throw. But for him to get into the fifth inning, he gave up a couple of hits before he was pulled. And then that inning went awry because for the first time in 65 years, the Pirate pitchers, get ready for this, Pirate pitchers walked in 6 runs. Yeah, I gave you a second just so you could digest that. Pirate pitchers walked in 6 runs in that inning against the Chicago Cubs. Could you imagine? Again, hasn't happened in 65 years. I believe the Chicago White Sox were the last ones to do that back in 1959. So Skenes, who gave up 3 runs, 4-plus innings, walked 2, struck out 7, had all those 100-mile-an-hour pitches. So Skenes, part of the major leagues, and that's a good sign for the Pirates as they try to find their way in an NL Central, which is a bit wide open. But you would think, considering the way the Pirates have played of late, and their fan base needs a jolt in the worst way. So every fifth day, you'll have Skenes pitch, and I'm sure that's going to be a welcoming sight for the Pirate fan as they're currently 7-1, 6.5 back of the Brewers there in the NL Central. And what else do we have here as we talk about baseball? Other than that, the Texas Rangers had an awful weekend against the Colorado Rockies as they got swept. And they're currently a game behind and a half game behind the loss and a half game behind the Mariners for first place. And the Astros are still inching closer. Remember, they were 8.5 dating back to the last podcast. And they salvaged that last game against the Yankees at the stadium there on Thursday. And since then, they did win 2 out of 3 against the Tigers. So they did make up some ground considering Texas had a nightmare of a weekend and gained some ground there in the division. That's why they're not lost for the playoff mix, because although I did mention that this could be a year, and I went out on a limb to say that they're not going to make it to the playoffs this year, but even at 15-24, or 15-25, I should say, let me double check that, even 10 games under 500, they are still within reach of the division. Granted, 6.5 games is still a lengthy lead by the Mariners, but here we are in the middle of May, and it's not as if they're playing in the AL East or the NL East for that matter, where they would really be about 10, 11, or 12 games back in the mix. So you can forget about the division there if they played in those divisions. And as it is, we saw in 2019 where the Washington Nationals were 19-31 after 50 games. And when it was all said and done, they won the World Series. So yes, you do have that as a barometer or as a reference point for a team that dug themselves in a big hole before coming out of it and then winning a World Series. We understand that that's very few and far between, but I'm sure the Astro fan, and funny enough, it came at the expense of the Houston Astros because we know that the Nationals won the World Series over the Astros that year. So they could even look at that if they want to catapult themselves back into this mix and maybe when it's all said and done, eke into the playoffs and we'll see what happens from there. But other than that, that's what you have there with the baseball. Nothing much to really get into. I know the Padres have played better. They're now game over 500. Diamondbacks are starting to play a little bit better as they're 3 under .500. Still not good for them, but they were even worse than that as of last week. Brewers are still in first. Cubs are nipping at their heels. We talked about what's happening in the NL East. AL East, Orioles have the slimmest of margins over the Yankees, who won 2 out of 3 against Tampa over the weekend. And there you have it. And slim margin there for the Guardians and Twins. Even the Royals, all separated by half game. So that could be an interesting race. Who would have thought AL Central would have a race here in the middle of the month heading into Memorial Day weekend. So that's good for baseball. You want to have those teams in the mid-markets and the smaller markets be a part of the mix. And even with the Tigers, just 3 in the loss behind the third-place Royals and 4 in the loss overall behind the Guardians. So that's something to hang your hat on there if you're a Tiger fan and just a baseball fan overall. And now let me wrap up here. Let me see. Do I have anything else baseball? Nah, that's pretty much it. Oh, let's look at the schedule. What the hell? We talked about Phillies, Mets. You have Toronto at Baltimore. So let's see if Toronto's going to do what they're going to do there. Why the Phillies and Mets are playing an afternoon game tomorrow is beyond me. Is that because of the Knicks at night? Maybe. Which is stupid when you say that. I don't know. Unless it's bad weather coming, maybe bad weather. And the Northeast has been brutal. Friday it rained with the Mets and Braves, although they got the game in. And then yesterday, oh, just brutal weather here in the Northeast. It's 85 one day and then it's 50 degrees the next. But Toronto, Baltimore, yes. Tampa at Boston. Chicago at Atlanta. Pittsburgh and Milwaukee. Cleveland at Texas. Oakland and Houston. Let's see if Houston, we talked about them, they could bounce back to have some games against inferior opponents. Not to say that they're a world beater in their right. Kansas City at Seattle. Dodgers, Giants, which I know rivalry. That's what you have there. So you don't really have a series that really sticks out. If you want to say, I can't even say Phillies, Mets. But I don't know if you have any 4-game series. Let's see real quick. We'll talk more about that on Thursday, whether we got any big time 4-game series. We'll reconvene and see what the baseball landscape looks at that time. But then finally, with the Preakness heading our way, as I talked about with the golf next week, or excuse me, this week with the PGA on Thursday, and then you have the French Open starting this coming week. I believe it's Sunday. Usually it would start Monday. Sometimes it starts Sunday. Anyway, the French Open is on the horizon. But you also have the second leg of the Triple Crown on Saturday down in Pimlico, with the Preakness, and Mystic Dan, who won the Kentucky Derby a week ago this past Saturday, is going to race. And there was a lot of speculation on whether or not he was going to race or not. In this case, it looked like he was not going to race, but it has been confirmed that Mystic Dan will run the Preakness. And I know at the top, if you're listening on Apple, Spotify, or even jreels.com for that matter, I did make a mention in my intro that it's not a good thing for horse racing. And yes, I'll pose that question again. I believe this is not a good thing for horse racing. To have the Kentucky Derby winner running the Preakness, it's a great thing. It would have been an awful thing. It would have been downright horrible if Mystic Dan, for whatever the reason, 18-1 to go into the Kentucky Derby, and for him to win the race and now set himself up to go down to win the second leg and possibly be a part of history where there will be all types of pomp and circumstance at the Belmont, which will be a month from this past Saturday, or really 3.5. Would it be 3 weeks? Well, it'll be 3 weeks from this coming Saturday, so it'll be a month from this past Saturday. How everybody will flock to Belmont Stakes to see whether or not if Mystic Dan does win the second leg, for him to be a horse that could win a Triple Crown, that would have been terrible if he didn't race. And that's why we killed, that's a little strong, I guess, because we're talking about a horse here, but we're talking about the team and the people who make the decisions surrounding that horse, Rich Strike, how I destroyed them saying that, how could you not race him, give him a shot, even if he's going to be up the track. We saw what happened there with Fierceness, who was the favorite to win the Kentucky Derby. He ended at 15th out of 20. And we get it that the Preakness, they're only going to have, but what, maybe 10, 11 horses be a part of the field here. But kudos to the camp of Mystic Dan that they're going to go ahead and race, because if they would have pulled this horse because, oh, we're not ready, or he needs more rest, or nonsense, that would have been the biggest cop-out, the biggest excuse, and it would have left the Belmont Stakes at nothing. As it is, at least you have some juice going into this race, unlike the Preakness with Rich Strike, because you're not going to have the Derby winner at least have a shot in the race because he's been pulled for, to me, reasons that were just flat-out dumb. And right, I'm far from a trainer, I'm far from owning a horse, etc., but for the sports fan, come on. Yeah, gotta put that horse in the race, even if it can't go the 1 3/16. And that's mile that is around the track. So, kudos to them. Let's see what that horse will do. I'm sure we'll get the full field come Thursday. We'll talk about it and get a little bit more in depth on it. So, one more time, much credit goes out to the people who manage and train Mystic Dan to be a part of the Preakness, because yes, at least we'll have an opportunity to see whether or not he'll win. If he gets embarrassed, all right, he gets embarrassed, but at least he was in the race. Unlike what you saw with Rich Strike, not in the race, and then he ran the Belmont, figuring out, oh yeah, he's going to come in the top three, and I believe he was seventh, or he was sixth. Put it this way, he was nowhere near the top three, or even close to being a part of the finish line when that race was all said and done. So that's what we have there, and that's what we have for this podcast, people. Where else are you going to get all of what I just discussed? NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, NFL. And I get it, there are plenty of other podcasts that cover that, especially the NBA and NFL. But wait a minute. What about horse racing? What about golf, as we'll preview the PGA? What about the French Open, as I'll preview that in the days to come? Indy 500, I may not preview it, but I'm going to talk about it, because for the one time in the year, I'll talk about how what it meant to me as a boy when the Indy 500 came around at the final Sunday of May. All of that, including boxing, including MMA, one podcast in roughly 1 hour. I'm waiting. Still waiting. That's right. Another podcast in the books. Thank you so much. Tell your friends, frenemies, foes, everybody about the podcast. As you know, I'm a full-time content creator doing this for the love, but of course, gotta start generating some income. So with your help, continue to support the podcast on Apple, Spotify, jreels.com, whichever podcast platform, here on YouTube, at jreels. Tell your friends, tell everybody, because I'm going nowhere, people, as long as I'm alive and breathing. If you want to hit me up with a question, comment, suggestion, do so on my YouTube channel at jreels, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, the jreels podcast, X, Twitter, jreels1, just the number, or the old-fashioned way, the jreelspodcast at gmail.com. Because whether you do or do not know, this is what I love to do, people. It's in the blood. It's in the DNA, as I like to say, talking sports pretty much since I've come out of the womb. And I will continue to do so with nothing but fire, passion, energy, fury, with my thoughts, opinions, critiques, praise, analysis, feelings on anything and everything. That happens on the world of the diamond, ice, gridiron, hardwood, golf course, racetrack, tennis court, boxing ring, octagon, you name it. From my lips to your ears, from my heart to your soul, from where I am to wherever you are, the J-Reels podcast always comes correct, direct, and in full effect. The South Bronx, the Southeast, the South Central, the South Pacific, and all points beyond. Peace, love, and God bless, everybody. And until next time on the J-Reels podcast, on the flip, baby.